Welcome to Heritage by Design, a podcast for heritage speakers. My name is Gabriela.
I am Jade.
I'm Megan.
Welcome to Heritage by Design, the podcast by and for those of us from bilingual homes. In each episode, we'll connect with heritage speakers and signers from different backgrounds to explore our stories and experiences at home, work, and in the world in general, to build up our community and show the struggles and the beauty of being heritage by design. Thanks for listening. So here we are for our second episode already. Crazy.
Yeah. And today we're going to have our one of our hosts, Gabby, to talk about her experience as a heritage speaker. Right, Megan?
Super exciting. Yeah. So Gabby, you want to say hi?
Hi. So I'm Gabriela, or Gabby de Robles. Okay. Yeah, so I was born in California, in Southern California, outside of LA. And my parents are both from Mexico. So my dad came here when he was around 14. So he's also kind of a heritage speaker. He's bilingual as well. And my mom immigrated here when she was a little bit older. She was around 30 when she had me too. So yeah, she doesn't, I mean, Spanish is her dominant language and she doesn't really speak a lot of English. So I always grew up speaking Spanish at home. And yeah, so I grew up the first 10 years of my life in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there is a pretty vibrant Latinx community there in Southern California. And I also grew up surrounded by a lot of family. All of my dad's family at the time lived in California. And he has like 11 siblings. So, and most of them had kids. So, you know, I grew up with a lot of cousins and aunts and uncles, and Spanish was always a very present part of our family. And so both in the home and in my community. So I always knew I was a heritage speaker, even though I didn't have the term for it. And then we moved to Denver when I was 10. And we live outside of Denver in a small suburb. And it's a little bit different than what I was used to in California, because it's a very white suburb, and that's not something that we were used to. And we also didn't have as much family here in Denver. But I still continued using Spanish in the home because I kind of had to. That's the language that my mom feels the most comfortable in. And with my dad too, I speak mostly in Spanish, even though he is bilingual. And I do have a younger brother, and with him, I speak in English. And English is also his dominant language. He doesn't feel very confident or comfortable with his Spanish. So my dad speaks to him in English and he speaks to me in Spanish. And that's always been our dynamic, and it still is that way.
Which is interesting, because it's something that's pretty typical. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say typical for everybody, of course, but it isn't the first time that, you know, I've heard of children being dominant in one language that their parent does not feel comfortable in, which, you know, kind of what did that mean for you as a kid, being able, you kind of shared something with your mom that your brother didn't share.
Yeah, it was interesting, because I think she did rely on me more when it came to like translating at doctor's offices or translating documents, because even though my dad is bilingual, he did work a lot. So I did help. I had to help with that a lot. And it would be kind of hard at times, because even now it'd be hard for me to translate in a medical setting or in a legal setting. And I was doing that when I was 10 years old. And that was something that my brother didn't really have to do, because, you know, he didn't really speak Spanish. And so I kind of, you know, in a way resented him a little bit for that. Like, why is it me that has to do this? But now looking back, like, it's such a privilege to be able to do that for my parents. But, you know, at the time when you're a kid, you're like, why am I having to take this on? And but yeah, I think for me, somewhat like of a burden, but also it was very beneficial too, because I would go to Mexico every summer and I was able, you know, to communicate with family members there, with my grandparents, my cousins, and that was great. And I loved going to Mexico, and that's something that my brother didn't really want to do. You know, he'd go here and there when he was forced to, but I would be there the whole summer, you know, without my parents. I'd stay with my grandparents, and I would love it. Yeah. So in that sense, like, I was very grateful to be able to speak Spanish and to use it. But yeah, it was interesting. And it's not something that I really think about until like now, right? Now that I kind of study these things and reflect back on it, I'm like, oh, that's kind of interesting how that dynamic worked out.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's interesting that you say, you know, you kind of mentioned it felt like a burden, but it also felt like a privilege, which is sort of two different sides of like a continuum almost, you know, but I think there are a lot of people that, especially, you know, in other languages, because in Spanish, depending on where you are, you might have access to doctors and lawyers and other people who speak the language, but other languages, a lot less so, you know. But it's interesting that you kind of mention both of these, you know, kind of extremes almost, but it's that you didn't have a choice.
Right.
I mean,
yeah. I kind of think of it as like a love-hate relationship, kind of. You kind of, as a kid, right, I thought, you know, the same thing as you, Gabby. I'm like, why is it always me? And I didn't even have the question like you did, because I didn't have any siblings. And so like, it's exactly like, but it's also not my fault that I don't have any siblings, you know? So I thought about that. But then as an adult, you realize how, you know, how much advantage you have for, you know, for learning or knowing a second language and knowing your, you know, heritage language. Not only, like you said, you can connect to your family that probably your brother wouldn't, you know, have the opportunity to. And that's insane, because that's, you know, we only, you know, our parents are always, you know, they're always getting just older, and we are too, so they're not getting any younger. So any time that we have with them, I feel like it's such a precious time. And if we can communicate with them throughout that time, I feel like that's just like a really big blessing in itself. So I think as an adult, but also because of what we do right now, because we're all kind of like teachers, and so we do, you know, realize and we benefit a lot from knowing our heritage language. But, you know, besides that, it just, you know, I also really appreciate knowing a second language nowadays, not when I was a kid, but yeah, nowadays. But also I struggle learning English too. So that would, you know, that adds on to the layer, just like the same reason, like the same way other, you know, other people who were born in the US and when they learn their heritage language, they struggle with it too.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that was more, you know, my story. So like what you're saying, Gabby, about translating and interpreting at the doctor's office, I didn't do that as a kid. I did it later on a little bit. I mean, very little in life for my grandparents, you know, once they moved closer to where my parents lived and they were getting sick and in hospitals more, in a place where there weren't Spanish speakers. And my mom was very overwhelmed by having to do it again, you know, because she did it as a kid, but then as an adult, and now the stakes were so much higher because her parents were that much older. So, you know, I'd go with her or go to the nursing home but I mean, I was, you know, in my 20s, 30s, you know, early 30s. I mean, I wasn't 10, 8, 5, you know, that's something else. I mean, that's, I can't imagine the emotions around that.
No, I know. I mean, at the time you just kind of do it. You don't really think about it, but you know, it's also like a little bit stressful, but it's not until later that you're like, whoa, like, how did I do that? Like, how did I do it now? How did I do it as a 10-year-old?
Has it ever come across to you, Gabby, that like, I'm only 10 years old. I'm not supposed to be doing that. Like, get someone to translate for you. Has that ever crossed your mind?
not as a kid, no, because that's all I knew. I thought it was like my responsibility. This is everyone's normal, right? And
yeah.
No, so to me, like, it was never like, yeah, like, this is too much for me as a 10-year-old. It was just like, yeah, it sucks, but it's something that I have to do. Now it's like, oh God, right? Like, oh, I have so much going on. Like, it's hard to fit it in, but still, like I said, it is a privilege to be able to give back to my parents in that way.
Now you learned English once you got to school, right?
Yeah, so I grew up in a Spanish-speaking home. The first 5 years of my life, like that's all I was exposed to at home, because my mom, right, that's all she spoke. And so my dad would only use Spanish, even though he was bilingual. And so I wasn't exposed to English until I started school when I was five. I didn't go to preschool, I went straight to kindergarten. And it was at the time, it was the sink or swim method. So basically, it was all English, and they had like ESL support for students who were struggling. But I guess I caught on very quickly. I do remember that I had peers who were not, who were not catching on as, as fast as I was, and they had to go to like a separate class during part of the day to the ESL class. But no, I was only in the English class, and I think it helped that my dad spoke English because I remember I'd come home and then I'd practice with him. And so, yeah, I was very lucky in that sense that I had that support at home, that he spoke English and that I was able to practice with him. But I do have those memories of it at first being like very overwhelming, like what is going on? I didn't really know what was going on. And we'd talk, with my friends, like, do you know what's going on? Like, what's happening? But then after a while, I remember just learning it and just being fluent after, I don't even know how long, but my parents say that it was pretty fast.
I mean, you were little. I remember having middle schoolers, in New York City who didn't speak English, and they'd come, and I mean, they absorb it. Plus, they have friends who don't speak their home languages, so they're like, Walter's coming with us. He doesn't know what we're saying, but we're gonna go play basketball, or we're gonna go, kids have a way of communicating with each other,
Yeah,
when they
definitely.
want to.
And we were all sort of like in the same boat. A lot of us came from bilingual households and in a very similar situation to mine where they only spoke Spanish. So like we're all kind of there for each other. And yeah, like you said, you find ways to communicate with each other, even with your peers that, don't speak Spanish. And yeah, so for me, it worked out really well, but I know that I have peers that really struggled. And yeah, I was very privileged that I wasn't, part of that group.
I was actually very interested, Gabby, when you're talking about like your dad, because he's bilingual. So the between the three of you, well, actually four, because then you have your mom dominantly speaks Spanish, and then your dad bilingual, your brother not just English, and then you kind of like like also bilingual by back then. So how is it between you and your dad actually? So you did mention that like you caught the chance to like practice English with him when you came home from school, right? Did you guys consider that like, oh, like I'm falling behind in school and that's why I need to practice English? Like, what were you think, if you remember, what were you thinking back then when you were practicing English with your dad?
I remember being very eager to learn, but I think that's like part of like who I am. Like I'm always like eager to learn new things. So I was excited to like practice with him, and I think he was too. So yeah, in that sense, it wasn't like very traumatic for me, which I'm very grateful for. I was just excited to practice, and he was too. And it was, I think it was just like a short period where we would practice in English because after that we switched only to Spanish, and that's how it is now. Like with my dad, I usually just speak in Spanish, and there's things that I need to say in English. I say them in English and he understands. But yeah, with my brother, it's only in English, and he speaks to my brother only in English. It's kind of a funny dynamic when I say it out loud. To me, it's like my normal, right? Because it's just always been that way. But yeah, I guess it's interesting. And then with my mom, my brother speaks in English and then she responds in Spanish. And even though her English, she struggles with it, she understands my brother, right? She's like used to him, and my brother understands her, so he can communicate with her, but not necessarily with my grandparents. So that part for me is very sad, because that's something that I value about my bilingualism is that I'm able to connect with my grandparents. And yeah, I've been able to share so much with them because of my Spanish. And I'm kind
It's
of sad
almost
that my brother doesn't get that.
It's also vice versa. It's not just you sharing with your grandparents, but also like them telling you guys stories, right? Like this might be so much that your grandparents want to share, or they want to tell your brother that, he probably won't have the chance to do it, by himself without, the help from you guys. So, I've only brought up the question earlier because I thought about, like you said, right, Gabby, you're super eager to learn and you were excited. But I could imagine like other peers you have in class that are struggling with, learning English when they first started school. And that's just like, to me, as I'm imagining right now, it's not a very encouraging start to your school life, like right at your start, and you're like automatically, without doing anything, without any math, for example, you're automatically arranged to a different classroom just to learn how to talk to other people. So, yeah, that's like, yeah.
And yeah, I do have friends who would be sad that they were being pulled out of the main classroom because they felt like they were missing out. Like, oh, you guys get to do fun things, you get to do arts and crafts, and we have to do English. We have to do these other exercises that aren't as fun as arts and crafts. And even till this day, like they still remember that. Like, I still have friends that have very negative experiences with ESL. I'm very grateful that I didn't have to go through that because I know it can be, very, very traumatic for.
I've been in ESL, right? So I know the goal of being in ESL is to get out of it. So like that was like my only goal back then. It wasn't like I had great teachers and my learning experience was amazing and I learned so much. And if anything, I learned the most English from ESL classes, right? But it doesn't matter. Like I feel like I just wanted to be the same with other people, other kids. Like I want to learn what they are learning. So
So switching over a little bit from home, maybe to kind of work life, how has being a heritage speaker sort of played a part or influenced, kind of the career path that you took? Because I think we know that it has.
It has in a lot of ways. I mean, I think it relates to what we're saying about, the burdens, but also the opportunities that come with being bilingual. And I think I had to get over the burdens first. I mean, yeah, the whole translating thing, that was like, that was kind of a burden, but not as much as like the shame attached to being a Spanish speaker or, a user of any minority language, especially when we moved to Colorado and we were living in a very white neighborhood. And at that age, you don't want to be different. And I was definitely different. I stood out. I was like one of two Latinos in my class, in my sixth grade class, and same thing like throughout. So I kind of had to get over that first, like that shame that was attached to that. And it didn't happen until high school when I started, going to Mexico more and taking more language courses and, improving my Spanish and really seeing it more as a resource. And my grandparents were getting older and I was like, I want to keep working on my Spanish so I can keep talking to them and keep hearing their stories and keep asking them questions. And I want to also be able to go to Mexico and not have people make fun of me, not have my cousins, rip apart my Spanish. And so that was a big motivator for me is, not wanting to be shamed for my Spanish. So I kept taking language courses. And at first, I wasn't very into my Spanish courses because it was a lot of I would usually be the only Latina in class, like the only Spanish speaker. And I would get corrected a lot because, and it was like kind of interesting because I felt like my Spanish was kind of like better than everyone else, a little bit more fluent than everyone else, but like I was being corrected the most and I did notice it. And it was things that I would use at home that my parents were using. So I was like, oh, that's it. So I caught on to that. Even though I didn't know what it was, it just kind of felt icky, and I was like, I guess I have to change it then. And
That's so it's I feel like this speaks to our personalities because I went through similar stuff, but I was so like obnoxious. I was like, This is how we say it at home. This is wrong.
Yeah.
You're wrong.
See, I wish I was like that. I'm like that now, but I no, it took me, it was a journey to get here.
No, but you're between the two, you're usually the nicer one.
Yeah, I'm like, okay. Yeah, especially like when it comes to authority, I was always that kid that I was like, oh, like I have to listen and do what I'm told. And so yeah, I started taking courses and my Spanish was getting a lot better. I was feeling more comfortable like writing and stuff like that. Because at that time it was like becoming popular to message, and so like I would be able to like message my cousins in Mexico, and it was like really exciting, like, oh, I can like spell this and like I know what I'm doing. And then yeah, and then I got to college and I started taking more courses that were not just like, grammar, but it was like literature courses and culture courses. And it was like really interesting to learn about like that side of my culture. Like I had never really had that opportunity until I got to college. And I was like, oh, I want to keep doing this and I get to do it in my home language. Like this is really cool. So it was, yeah, I was in college where I was like, yeah, like I want to keep learning Spanish and learning about, other cultural aspects that come with it and about my history. And so yeah, that's kind of how I got into this career. And now I do this for a living.
And what do you do?
I teach, so I'm at CU Denver. I teach Spanish, and I also teach linguistics courses.
So you do this stuff all day long, all day, every
I
day.
do, yeah. This is all I do. And I so here I teach the courses for heritage speakers. So that's like I
Oh,
love that class because
wow.
it's like, yeah, I'm with my people, and it just feels like a relief, like when I'm in the class, like, oh, like everyone here gets it. We come from a similar background. And it also helps that, I did grow up part of my life here in Denver, and a lot of my students are from Denver and also from Mexican households. So it's, yeah, we share a lot of
Connections.
similarities and experiences. And yeah, I try to give them the Spanish course that I would have wanted, as a heritage student.
That's awesome. It's great.
Even Latina teacher, like I've never had a Latina or a Latino instructor until I got to college. And I think that also played a role, like, oh, like I want to be like them. Like what they're doing is really cool. Like they're teaching about their background and about their language. Like I want to do that too. I think that helped too, having that mentorship and that representation.
It's so funny because somebody just this morning, one of my students was asking me, when did you really start, like speaking Spanish and feeling comfortable and kind of learning, being able to read and write and do all these things? And I was like, yeah, college, kind of similar to you, of like kind of connecting a little bit more with everything and feeling, I guess, just more motivated and just finding kind of my way, that this is my language too.
And also validated, like, oh, like I'm interesting enough to be studied, and studying, because I wasn't really exposed to the term heritage speakers until I took a course on bilingualism. And we're literally just studying like families like mine. And I was like, whoa, like I didn't know we were worthy of study. Like I didn't know we were that interesting that people are studying us. So it felt like, yeah, I felt really validated.
That's cool. All right, Gabby, we could go on all day with you.
Lovely. Most definitely.
But I'm sure we'll keep learning more and more about you in other episodes and as we talk to other people. So thanks for letting us question you a little bit and learn a little more
Thank
about
you
you.
for letting me share my story. You're part of my story.
So we'll look
Thank
forward to hearing
you.
more about it and sharing more about all of our experiences in later episodes.
If you like our podcast and want to follow more stories of our heritage speakers, learners, and teachers, please feel free to subscribe to our podcast, and we can't wait to hear from you from the next episode. We'll see you next time. Bye bye.
Chao.
Bye bye. Adios, muchas gracias.